Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a relatively quick show today, because there's not a huge amount of things happening, but the promises of many more things happening in the weeks to come. I'm Patrick Beja, and I'm going to be doing this one solo. We're going to be talking about a little bit of Assassin's Creed and a lot of conjecture and potential announcements coming. We're also going to be covering the news from Sony's side, on Microsoft's side, on Stadia. Side, if you want to call that news. Yeah, I'm a little bit sour on Stadia. And what's happening this summer with different shows and trade shows that are canceled / repurposed online. And so let's just get started. I really think it's not going to be very long. But Assassin's Creed Valhalla was officially announced yesterday as of the time of this recording, and it was really just a cinematic trailer, so we didn't learn a lot about it. It is absolutely, as had been rumored for months and months, set in the Vikings world. It's a tribe of Norwegian Vikings invading England in the 9th century. And it looks like it's going to be, we don't exactly know, but it looks like it's going to be mostly following the very successful template of Assassin's Creed Origins / Odyssey, mostly the Odyssey improvements, which I think was possibly, you know, it was definitely one of my favorite games of last year. Last year? The year before. God, it's been 2 years already. And it will be coming out at the end of the year, as expected. You'll be able to play a male or female protagonist. You will have your settlement in Norway, which you'll be able to travel back to very often. You'll have four regions, four kingdoms in England, which was not yet a country back then, that you will be able to negotiate with and fight with, of course, etc., etc. On the gameplay side, you'll be able to dual wield anything. They joked during the commentary of the trailer that you'll be able to dual wield two shields, which should be interesting. And you'll have they're focusing on variety of enemies, which I guess you could say it was a little bit of a it never really bothered me, but in the previous ones you were always fighting just regular humans, so maybe there will be other things in this one. I don't know, we'll see. But it looks like, the hype following Odyssey is really big. So this one has a lot of potential and a lot of things to prove at the same time. But maybe the more interesting aspect of this, because this was, again, really just a cinematic trailer, was the announcement that we're going to be having a gameplay demonstration next week, on May 7th, during the Xbox Insider. There will finally be an interesting Xbox Insider, and it should be really interesting because they're focusing on Xbox, the next generation of Xbox. I was going to say Xbox Series X. They might start talking about their lower-powered console, but I suspect they won't. I think that's going to be coming later. But they're going to be talking about the Xbox Series X games. Now, it seems it's not going to be first-party games, so no Halo, no Forza, no Senua's Sacrifice. Which one is the second one? None of their games, none of Microsoft's games, but third-party games, which should be really interesting, of course. Third party games are always a little bit less impressive than first party games because, of course, they have to be developed on a number of different platforms, and they're all going to be... It is still really difficult to be awake in this period of children being at home. But yeah, so third parties, of course, are not going to be the best of the next gen, but it's still going to hopefully be pretty impressive. I predict a lot of ray tracing because this is the easy thing to showcase on the next gen. The developers have had time to play with it on PC, and they will have platforms that are all equipped, so it will be basically ray tracing fiesta, I suspect. Other than that, on the look forward to that next week on the 7th. I'm really excited about it. Other than that, on the Xbox side, we have a logo for the Series X, which is a... God, I'm going to be yawning through this entire show. I apologize. It's always a little bit difficult when I speak for the entire show alone. But I think this one, the kid had not slept very well like a couple of days ago. And I'm still paying for it now, 2 days later. I'm not 20 anymore. But yeah, the trademark for the X, for the Series X's X, is it seems pretty plain on paper. It's essentially one of the X's bars, which is full, and the other one, which is clearly split on the sides. And it seems a little bit plain when it's just black and white, but I think they can do a lot of interesting things with it. It's almost like a rune. It feels like a rune more than a letter, and I think it looks pretty cool. But we'll probably see a lot of that next week. And they also announced that they have 90 million monthly active users on Xbox Live, which is... pretty cool, but even more interesting, 10 million subscribers for the Xbox Game Pass, which is, of course, a steal at the moment with the promotion still valid, I believe. And they are the leading game subscription service, unsurprisingly. EA has 5 million subscribers for their EA Access, which is not the same as Premier. Access is like the back catalog, and I'm sure they count Premier in it as well. They don't differentiate, but it's... God. I'm sorry. 5 million is still impressive, I think. 10 million for Xbox. I mean, it's not surprising that Xbox is leading, but I wouldn't have guessed that EA had 5 million subscribers. The Access portion of it is the cheaper one. It's $5 a month, I believe, and they're now available on PC, of course, but also Microsoft's Xbox, which has been the case for a while, and Sony's PlayStation 4, which has been the case for only a few months. So 5 million, it's not bad. And the numbers I've seen kind of compare everything together because they also include the PlayStation Now, which was primarily a streaming service, but now for months now also includes a game subscription period. Like you can install the games as well. But of course, Sony's offering doesn't include the most recent games. And it's not as interesting, actually, surprisingly, even not as interesting as EA's subscription. So it's definitely Microsoft taking the lead there. And I wonder if, seeing these numbers, Sony isn't going to start thinking about maybe pushing PlayStation Now a little bit more. We'll see what happens. Talking about Sony, The Last of Us Part 2 has a release date. Yeah, it's June 19. And we thought it was going to be delayed much more. And Sony, of course, it was announced that it was going to be delayed like 3-4 weeks ago. And I thought it might become a PlayStation 5 launch title because they said, we don't know when we're going to be able to launch it. And they ended up only delaying it by 3 weeks. Ghost of Tsushima is also delayed by 3 weeks. I think it was supposed to come out June 26, I think, and now it's July 17. So obviously they're pushing it so as not to make a traffic jam with The Last of Us Part 2 coming out a week before. So yeah, Last of Us Part 2 June 19 and Ghost of Tsushima July 17. I think my guess is that they initially wanted to wait until they could have, as we discussed in the last show, I believe, they could have everything set up to deliver the games to all of the retail stores and have foot traffic in those retail stores to sell it as much as they could. But maybe they realized that's just, you know, guessing. Maybe they realized if we're going to wait for that, it's going to be, you know, spring 2021. Because nothing is going to, well, things aren't going to go back to normal for many, many months to come. And so they figured, all right, things have improved a little bit on the logistics front. Let's just do it now because we can't wait until, you know, our next generation console is out. So we'll never know, probably, but that's my guess. We also have very unsurprising rumors about... You know what? This is going to become a joke, and I can't wait for people to yawn at me on Twitter with the yawn emoji. So I'll apologize one last time now and for the next 100 times that I'm going to yawn because I'm really tired and I have a 2-year-old, I'm not going to mention it. We're just going to pretend it doesn't happen. So the other rumor is that Horizon Zero Dawn is going to be, they have signed off on 2 additional titles on the main series, making it a trilogy, and an additional side title, which would be focused on cooperation. And I am, first of all, it's not surprising at all. And second of all, it is very exciting. Obviously, Horizon Zero Dawn was a huge success for PlayStation 4. It was definitely the breakout title of that generation for Sony. So obviously, they're going to double down on it. Also, the studio head for I'm not going to remember his name. Anyway, he's now the head of first party development at SEE. Oh, Herman Holtz. There you go, Herman Holtz. He used to be the boss of Guerrilla Games, and now he's heading SIE Worldwide Studios. So obviously, it's not surprising that Sony is pushing for his old studio's game, but. Again, it would have happened no matter what, probably. So a trilogy makes sense. There are 2 big questions now. Will Horizon Zero Dawn 2 or Horizon 1 Dawn or Horizon Zero Dusk? Who knows? Will that next title in the series be a launch title for the PlayStation 5, which a lot of whispers are saying it could happen, and it definitely could. It would be a big hit, I think, for the console. Launch title, maybe, you know, within the first couple of months of the release of the console. So that's the first question, and that would be awesome. It would instantly sell, you know, millions of consoles. And the other question is, that side thing that is going to be multiplayer, what kind of multiplayer is it going to be? Is it going to be like a narrative adventure with 2 or 3 or 4 players, like a small team thing? Or is it going to be a more massively multiplayer a la Destiny, which is also very a real possibility? I mean, the world of Horizon Zero Dawn makes complete sense to adapt in a multiplayer game like Destiny. It would absolutely work in that way. So that's a big question. And those are really just rumors. So, you know, the height of speculation. But yeah, we'll see what happens there. And we might see what happens fairly soon. We're already in May, and the next the rumors are that Sony will introduce the PlayStation 5 properly at last on June 4th. And even if it's not June 4th, it might be that we get that during the month of June. A friend of the show, Daniel Ahmad, was saying that there are big announcements coming in May. Those are probably the Microsoft announcements that I just talked about earlier, next week, and in June, but that the things that were planned for E3, the E3 period, are actually going to be broken out into several different spots, and those will be both in June, in May and June. So it seems like by the end of June, we'll know everything that there is to know about both consoles and their games lineups. So it's coming. It's coming, and it's coming fairly soon. Talking about the summer and plans, Gamescom is not going to happen, or at least not physically, which is, again, very unsurprising. There will be a digital Gamescom at the end of August. So that's a peculiar one, because it seems that we're going to have a number of different shows taking over for E3 during the month of June. Some announcements in May. The shows in June are, I think, the PC gaming show is going to return as a digital thing. There's IGN doing the Summer of Games, which has a lot of support from different publishers, which is essentially what will replace E3, it seems, or that's what it looks like. And we have a Future Games show, which is focused on the future publications and, you know, of course, partners with those. So, it's all going to be in probably a little bit in May, but mostly June. So we'll have an E3 period type thing during the month of June. So I'm really happy that this is not completely disappearing. Also, you noticed that I didn't mention the leaks about The Last of Us Part 2, because I don't think there's a huge amount of interesting stuff to talk about there, but there will leaks about The Last of Us Part 2. And I'm not going to talk about this much more, or at all. The last thing I wanted to talk about was the streaming future with Stadia, and the fact that Stadia had one of their Stadia Connects, which, you know, I joked on Twitter that I was ready to be underwhelmed and that my expectations were met, meaning I was underwhelmed. There was really nothing interesting in that Stadia Connect. Stadia continues to fumble things more than I could ever have imagined, as sound as the technology is. Although I have to say, for me, it might be because everyone is at home and using, you know, the internet for meetings with Zoom. But I'm a little bit remote, even though I do have fiber. But Stadia's quality has been very disappointing in the past few weeks. I try it now and then, but honestly, it's not something I would use on a regular basis. So I'm sure it's because of the current situation, but that situation isn't going to go away anytime soon, or maybe it will. But at the moment, the point is, with this very exceptional situation, so don't get me wrong, it's playable. It's absolutely playable. It's a little bit jittery, a little bit of the quality of the image is fluctuating a little bit. So if this was my only way to play, it would be annoying. It wouldn't be like I can't use it. But as it stands, I have many other ways to play, because I'm an avid gamer, and so Stadia is not my preferred option. But let's go back to the Stadia Connect. Two things to note. First of all, they announced a few games. PlayerUnknown's Battleground is coming to Stadia. It's also this month's free game for the pro version, which, all right, whatever. And EA is bringing some games. For now, the games are older. We're talking about FIFA, Star Wars, Jedi Fallen Order, Madden, things like that, which you know, they're more wide-reaching, you know, general public games. But also, EA doesn't have anything right now, anything new to incorporate into Stadia right now. So the fact that these are old games is less interesting than the fact that EA is starting to support Stadia development. So that's actually kind of a hopeful thing. EA is putting games on Stadia. We already had support from Ubisoft, pretty big support. And by the way, Assassin's Creed Valhalla will be on Stadia as well. So we're getting some more big development studios support on Stadia. So that's the interesting part to me. And the other interesting part is how they talked about their service. For the first time, since they launched it, they finally explained, like even to the point of it being comical, why the service is interesting. They said several times you don't need to buy a console, you don't need to buy anything, you just need to click on this and you can play now. It was, you know, the first time, and in the context of that pandemic, they were all, you know, execs from the company doing this from home. That's not the way that is that you communicate that idea to people, because the people who would be receptive to that idea will not have watched the Stadia Connect. So they still haven't fixed their communication issues, I don't think. But at least they seem to be aware that they're not communicating about it properly. And that's the first step. So I'm guessing that the next steps will be that this changes the way they communicate to the public and to the media, to the general, you know, media, not to the specialist media, but to the general media. They will finally, I'm guessing, tell them what is important to be told. And talking about the streaming future, GeForce Now is losing more developers, more publishers. Warner Brothers isn't on GeForce Now anymore. The Xbox Game Studios games aren't on GeForce Now anymore. Of course, we've discussed this before. It's all a question of contracts and licenses and the fact that many of those publishers are either choosing to launch their own service, streaming service, or they're partnering up with other streaming services. Obviously, you know, Sony, Microsoft being the big player, and Stadia. Those are the three big ones. And I wouldn't be surprised if within a couple of years we see white label services being launched by publishers. I think the biggest candidates for this are Ubisoft, potentially, although they're on everything. Activision Blizzard, that could potentially happen. EA, clearly. And Bethesda has been interested in that technology, surprisingly, on the technical side. So, yeah. Anyway, the bottom line is GeForce Now is officially launching in June. And sure, they still have games, and those games are, you know, there are many games that you can play, and many of the publishers or developers that don't necessarily want to deal with all of that are just not bothering with it. So you have a lot of your Steam games that are still available. But at this point, I think that's it. Maybe Ubisoft. Ubisoft is, as I said, everywhere. I'm not sure, but they might be everywhere. The service itself is still interesting to many people, I'm sure. But I would say it's not a big contender anymore in that race that is opening at the end of the year with xCloud / at the beginning of next year, beginning end of next year when things will ramp up for streaming. So it's still pretty cool for what it is, but as we discussed before, it's probably a transitionary service that won't be a big dog in the future. Although someone on Twitter suggested something interesting, which is they could go the way of Shadow, the Shadow PC service, and offer you a full PC. Now, of course, that's not the point of GeForce Now. And even though they have been thinking about providing the service for productivity software and, you know, creation software, editing, modeling, rendering, etc., the point is not to have a full PC with a Windows license and a thing that you need to keep updated, as is the case with Shadow PC. But if they can't win in the licensing game for licensing games that will launch directly, maybe they just pivot to a full Windows PC, at which point it seems the publishers would have a lot less legal ground. I don't know that for a fact, but that's what I'm guessing. They don't have a lot of legal footing to prevent the service from existing or the games to be available on the service, because it is just a Windows PC, which you launch your games from as you would at home, and not a thing that is jerry-rigged together and mutualizes resources to launch the games for everyone. And that is a different technology and a different approach, I think, which would lead to different results. So maybe they could do that. It's a possibility. And maybe they would have, you know, the two options. For the games that are licensed, then they do the thing they were doing now, which is a little bit finicky, but works. And for the games that aren't, then they default you to Windows desktop, as Shadow PC does, and it works very well. And sure, you need to keep it updated yourself, etc., etc. But that is an option for the service to keep existing. Actually, I guess they could even run it sometimes, like say they will wake it up for you and launch the updates, quote unquote, kind of, so that it's always updated. I guess when it's in the cloud, they could do something like this, which could be interesting. So your games are always ready to launch. That could be interesting, might happen. But that is a way out for the GeForce Now gaming service, I think. If they don't do anything like that, I suspect it won't be around, or not as interesting, at least for a long while. The last bit of news that I wanted to mention is the Travis Scott concert in Fortnite, which was, you know, kind of like the Marshmello concert, but even bigger. They reached 12.3 million players at the premiere. There were a number of other showings, and it was really interesting. So you logged into the game 10 minutes before, you would be dropped into the island, but with nothing happening. And then the countdown, etc. And then it would start, and you had the avatar of Travis Scott in the distance. It was huge. And then it would turn into like a psychedelic experience where you would, swim through the sea, fly through space, a bunch of things. It was only 10 minutes long. But it's a really interesting approach, of course, during the pandemic, to attend a concert, quote unquote, but also as a virtual event. It's something that many other companies have tried to do before. But, I've been saying for a long time that Epic has been managing Fortnite incredibly well. Like, it is not just the luck of being the right thing at the right time, but also what they're making of it is unbelievably skillful. And they've managed to create this kind of societal phenomenon with this thing, which is becoming like a cultural thing. And a cultural thing, not just because they are a cultural phenomenon by themselves, but also because they're integrating like cultural events in that way that has never really been done before. So I thought that was really fascinating. There are also rumors about a Party Royale mode, which is essentially a hanging out mode, and you don't need to kill people and be the last one, as is the case with the gaming aspect of it, of Battle Royale. It's been data mined and leaked here and there, so it seems it's coming, but it's essentially a mode where you hang out, which you know, the game is already being used to hang out by many, many people, mostly younger people. And that makes, again, a lot of sense. So you don't have your guns, you're just hanging out, you're having fun. I'm very curious to see what happens there. And last thing, Epic has capitulated to the big Google, and they are now available. I mean, Fortnite is available on the Play Store. If you don't remember, they used to make you sideload Fortnite into your Android device, and that meant that they would keep all of the money you would pay through the app. They didn't have to pay the App Store tax, and they had to give that up. I'm guessing anyone who wants to play Fortnite already has installed it via the sideloading thing that sidesteps the store. So this is also a way of reaching more people. But of course, the people who install it that way, when they buy stuff, are going to pay 30% to Google. And Epic isn't happy about this, and they've been fighting it for a long time. But there you go. They made that choice at this point. And the last thing I wanted to talk about is an old favorite of mine, World of Warcraft. And I started playing World of Warcraft again quite a bit. I've been excited about Shadowlands, which is the next expansion. The alpha has started. It was a couple of weeks ago. And I didn't really like the Battle for Azeroth expansion, which is the current one. Many people were unhappy with it, and I wasn't really unhappy. It just didn't grab me, so I stopped playing, and I had a lot of other things to do. And the next expansion, the Shadowlands, it seems like it has a lot of very interesting elements, mostly the roguelike portion of it, the roguelike feature. It's Torghast, the Tower of the Damned, which seems like a really fun feature that everyone, this is exceptional, everyone in the community is loving as it is now. Of course, it's not going to be exactly like this when it launches. There are a number of things that can't be, that can't stay the same between the alpha, which is designed for testing, and that facilitates a lot of features, and the game when it launches, and there's some concern there. But still, everyone is loving this thing, and a bunch of other things. I won't get into it. Go listen to the instance if you're interested in those things. But it's a really cool series of concepts, and it got me excited, but I don't want to play the beta or the alpha, because I don't have to anymore. I don't work for Blizzard, so I don't have to know, and I love to be surprised when the game launches. So I want to preserve my mind from the spoilers of the game. We'll see if that holds. But the thing I did was I launched Battle for Azeroth, the current retail, which I left a few months after it launched, what was it, a year and a half ago. And I've been sucked in. I've been playing nonstop for about 10 days, something like that. And I'm really enjoying it. I think they really improved a lot on the expansion. It's a little bit hectic when you come back at the end of an expansion, unsurprisingly. But I think even more than for other expansions, there are a ton of different systems that, you know, kind of pile on to one another. And it's difficult between the different systems, the Heart of Azeroth, this cloak, the war campaign, the other quests, the factions you have to do for your pathfinding, flying achievement, etc., etc. You're being pulled a little bit in every direction. So I think that is a little bit, not a bummer, but it's like, oh, what's happening? But it took me a while, but I still did all of the things that I wanted to do, and I'm still playing. I think I'm going to go for the flying achievement, and that will be it. But so it's going to take a few weeks still. But I will say it is very frustrating to be playing a pure DPS class, and that is something that is problematic in MMORPGs, or at least in World of Warcraft. I'm sure others have other ways of fixing this, but essentially, anytime you want to queue for a dungeon or a raid, it takes forever. Forever! Like, it's half an hour, an hour and a half to get into a raid, it's ridiculous. And I used to level with a hybrid class, and I didn't do that this time because I wanted to go back to my mage. But I don't think, like, it's actively it is actively worsening my experience in the game. I think it's a big part, not a big part, but a substantial part of why I stopped playing a few months ago, or a year and a half ago, actually, because it was just frustrating. And I think next time, for the next expansion, I will start with my druid again, or maybe another class, we'll see. But I will play a class that can either heal or tank or both, because I think DPS classes are for people who have a lot more time than me and don't have a kid, I suppose. So, but still, I'm liking it, and I'm going to keep playing a little bit. And then when the pre-patch hits, or maybe before, I will start leveling my hybrid class. Probably before, because now we have a bonus XP thing until the pre-patch. So, yeah. World of Warcraft. It never dies. It's always there. All right. That is going to be it for this show. Just over half an hour. It is shorter than it usually is. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. We'll keep doing these things, of course. So hopefully you are enjoying it and you'll be there when we come back. And until then, you can find me at frenchspin.com if you want to comment on everything I said. You can also find me on Twitter, not Patrick, Instagram, not Patrick. What else? LinkedIn, I'm Patrick Beja over there. Facebook, not Patrick. You can even find me on TikTok, not Patrick01. Someone took not Patrick. I'm angry. Even though I created my TikTok account like 2 years ago, maybe not 2 years, at the very least a year ago. It was a long time ago that I did my TikTok account, but it was already taken. So frustrating. So I don't use TikTok. I was joking mostly. I have it and I never posted anything. Maybe I'll look into it. But you can find me on Instagram, not Patrick. That's where the young people live. So that's where you live as well. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Talk to you then. Bye.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.